Voices with Steve Beck.
Very good Tuesday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Series XM online, and at the website, stevebeck.com, all these fabulous options. day two, as we lead up to the biggest early season, three-year-old Saturday. I think very much going to be shifting gears, probably by tomorrow. This card, obviously, the Holy Bull card drawn, and you got the Santa Anita card drawn. And there's a there's a lot more Saturday at Santa Anita beside the Lewis. So I think four stakes Saturday, and the Withers will be the third leg of the 3-year-old tripod. And they'll draw tomorrow. We'll talk to Andy later. I've not really looked at the speculative field for the Withers. So I gotta get a handle on that. Some more follow-up, obviously, to the weekend this morning, trying to, I had to actually kind of tap dance around this morning. We're coming to you from Gulfstream, and the Horseman's Lounge, which actually was turned into like a media press area on Saturday. One thing, on that topic, actually, as an aside, there was a terrific presence Saturday of the Latin, the Hippico media, really strong. And, it all starts with DRF and Espanol, that does a phenomenal job. And then there were all kinds of correspondents from Central and South America that were in here. I kind of came in a couple different times to get a water bottle and whatnot. And I kind of made a mental note. I've certainly advocated for the industry extending on that front, that we don't do enough outreach on that topic at all, and it doesn't make any sense. We've got a community of Central and South American horsemen and riders, so should take advantage of it and market to them. And down here in New York too. New York they've tried in different find not a new audience, but those that are already interested and that are predisposed to being interested in the game. That was a big part. I didn't expect to go off in this direction. That was a big part of digesting what goes on here Saturday. And Chuck and I actually were talking. In fact, Chuck's going to be on tomorrow and with Troy Levy to talk about Game of Silks. Speaking of Chuck, the Game of Silks concept, which Naira has gotten involved with, and you're seeing the early, the early foundation, the establishment of the concept, and Troy and Chuck will explain it tomorrow. But Chuck and I were talking about this on Sunday, and and I don't want to take away from the visit tomorrow, but whenever there's the big event, and it's not, obviously it's not limited to what went on here Saturday, in a Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup and you know, Del Mar opening day, whatever, you know, whatever signposts along the way that are potential opportunities for the game to market itself. The prevailing sentiment is that we're spending too much time, effort, and money against an audience, a potential audience, that won't really ever be interested in the game, the, you know, the heart and soul of the game, that the party atmosphere, the social portion, the, you know, the fashion and that element. But there's really no guarantee that those people that, you know, may be lured into considering the game and coming to a big event won't get engaged. I mean, you're looking to engage people at any level, and the game has countless levels to which you can, you know, become interested and lured. I mean, the horseplay, yes. I mean, we focus on the horseplay. That you know, that's, you know, the majority. I like to think that the majority of us that, you know, that take part in all the different ways that, you know, we were brought into the game because of the opportunity to bet on it, and that, you know, that for the purposes of what we do here 3 hours a day, that's the central focus, and it's imperative. It's just an absolute imperative. The game needs, it's the tripod we talk about, you know, the bricks and mortar, the horse players, and the horsemen. And horsemen is a umbrella term for breeders and owners and trainers and their staffs. It's all interdependent, but the horseplay absolutely is the drivetrain. And ownership, you know, the entry mate. I mean, those are the two things that, I mean, the breeders are going to breed, right? I mean, the breeders have brood mares, and they're going to produce horses, and there has to be somebody to buy them, and there has to be somebody to bet on them. I mean, that I you know, not trying to diminish anybody else's contribution, but horse players and owners, they're the priority. But how do people become owners and horse players? You got to engage them somehow. And, you know, actually, we're going to talk to Shug. Shug's going to be on this morning. And Shug is involved. If you didn't see the ownership line, in fact, I've got it here. I got the program right here, because sometimes the programs don't have the PPs don't have the complete ownership line. But the horse that Shug ran, we were looking at pre-race, we're talking about the ownership, and here's a name, Ken Langone. And I'm sure that there's some people that right away know exactly who that is. That's the That's the chairman of Home Depot. And a guy that is worth $6 billion. He's in his 80s. And he's taken an interest in the game. And it's unbelievable. where's this guy been the last 30 years? Shug had the guy that he played golf with, that Kathleen O. In fact, that's how this whole conversation came up, I think, was I asked Shug how Kathleen O. was doing and when she was coming back. And it runs under Wingate. And she's doing good, by the way. He said she's just coming back. You can't preclude that, you know, some of what feels like fluff and completely misguided marketing concepts, you can't know what its worth is. It you know, it's one of those investments that it is just, you know, you got to kind of do it on blind faith. And there's been several examples of success on this topic that, you know, when certain things have been attempted, and we can be very direct about, you know, the ABR, what they are trying to do with, you know, outreach, predominantly with kind of a social tinge to it. But we always talk about going back, what, to 2010 and the McKinsey study that recommended that the industry invest heavily in television exposure. And that produced the Jockey Club tour on Fox, which after a couple of years gave rise to what we now see with Naira, the ongoing, you know, summer at Saratoga and America's Day at the Races. And it's been an absolute boon to, you know, the online wagering component and exposure of the game. And, you know, when it was introduced, along with the ABR, it started with that bus tour, a lot of this was, you know, people scoffed at it. You can't scoff at it. I know that there's people that there's, you know, people that are uncertain about, you know, what the micro, you know, the fractional micro share ownership, what its actual benefit is. Well, I mean, you talk to the racetrack operators, you talk to any track where, you know, the fractional concept horses appear, and you talk to the horsemen that are training them, and, you know, they say that, you know, these people are fully engaged. They're coming out to the track. They're coming to the barn. And every little bit helps. And you just don't know, when you look at an audience of whether they're attending a function or look at the contest play. Look at contest play. I mean, if you looked around a room and you saw Gary West sitting there, Gary West, the owner, he's wearing a gray hooded sweatshirt. He looks like Bill Belichick on the sideline. He looks a lot like Bill Belichick, actually. you wouldn't know that he's, you know, one of the wealthiest people in the game or anywhere else, and a huge benefactor and so forth. You don't know who is you know, taken an interest in the game from any of these kinds of efforts, or who came to the racetrack for the first time here Saturday, and you know, basically, you know, the attempt is to make it kind of a spectacle and make it as much about the entertainment as it is about the racing. And if people came and enjoyed themselves and asked their friends, the friends that invited them, you know, can we do that again? You've got yourself, I mean, I talk about my friends Kelly and Martin that I brought down from Montreal in the 90s. that, you know, are at Belmont every year, have come to Derby, go to Breeders' Cups, they've gotten involved in you know, in our horses and the DT horses in a small way. There's no benefit to ridiculing and downplaying any of the different kinds of attempts to engage, you know, people that haven't, you know, been exposed as of yet. It is all worthwhile. And, you know, I've told these stories 100 times. I got my first thrills of being at the racetrack came in the infield at Preaknesses. You know, that people have scoffed at forever. And then I ended up being involved in the concession business, and you know, I saw a completely different, you know, a much different understanding of what, you know, what can come out of, you know, a single trip to the racetrack, right? And you know, somebody spinning the dial and landing on, you know, a Thursday summer at Saratoga broadcast. It's a winning of hearts and minds. It's right. Is it that the proverbial, you know, hand-to-hand combat? Bring a friend. Show somebody how much, you know, how much fun it is, how unique it is, how special. That's and whatever way, you know, the people get involved in. We talk about getting involved in pedigree and being fascinated by that. Make a bet and then cashing a ticket. And you know, we were with Barry, Barry Spears, Saturday. And Barry, somebody asked the friends that Sid had come down from Palm Beach. They've only been to the track a couple of times, and they loved it. But they asked Barry, how did you get? And Barry talked about, you know, going to the track with his dad and up in Boston, and at the age of 8, and being fascinated by the PPs and what the numbers meant. So, and that's what this is. This is it's a game, it's a sport, it's a gambling event, it's a industry, it is so many different things all at once. And the sum of it, and whatever way that it's offered out there, is, you know, potentially beneficial. So I'm glad I had the opportunity to be here Saturday. And I mean, I don't know if you saw what Chuck actually wrote a whole thing, you know, talking about how this event is an example of the need to be constantly, you know, reevaluating what you're producing, what you're offering to the public, and, you know, massaging it, you know, always trying to adapt it to the marketplace, the demands of the marketplace. There's an interesting, I'm sure we'll talk about this with Dave Hill Thursday. Just because of course I was fully vested in the Eagles on Sunday, and then, you know, waiting to see who they would play. And then, you know, as that game ended, right away, you know, the odds start to post. Well, I just happened to come across the book, the sports book manager's Twitter feed from Circa. And they did something very interesting. They opened up at Kansas City -2.5. And that number was immediately with a $20,000 limit on people taking the action. And it immediately, there was a market correction literally within 15 minutes. It had floated the other way. And he's actually got the timing charted. And what he called it was interesting. A price, not a price adjustment, a price exploration. Price discovery. And it is essentially, you know, they were putting out a number to attract attention. And obviously Circa is a fairly new property, right? They got that crazy pool, swimming pool, and they're trying to make a splash. They're trying to draw attention. And so, you know, they put out a number that they think is, they actually, if you read the discussion, there's a very good, sort of analysis of what transpired. Patrick Everson has the Fox Sports betting analyst, but you know, most of the books were in the pick'em to Eagles -1, and Jeff Benson, who was that was the guy who's and it just sort of jumped in my face, and you know, as I was, you know, reading everything going on Twitter after the games. And you know, clearly they do that as a way to attract attention. And you know, there's a message there for what we do, which is, you know, create a splash and create things to draw attention. So I was going to say there's no such thing as bad publicity, quote unquote. Yay, not exactly. There is bad publicity that certainly we're all familiar with. You know, and there's also the, you know, the challenges that arise from having to react publicly, you know, with PR machinery to difficult situations, and that's part of every that's part of any business, any industry, any sport. I mean, look at how much we talk about the complain about the stewarding. Well, how different is that issue coming out of those two games? I mean, you got supposedly the best referee crews in the sport, right? And there were, you know, legitimate gripes and complaints and calls and non-calls that people were completely rightfully disgusted with. We're gonna pretend that that, you know, that when there's a stewarding issue, or when there's, you know, a botched circumstance, you know, an entry issues and horses improperly scratched, accidentally out of the racing office, and horses running for purse money only. I mean, even the modern games situation, you can qualify that. You know, we've got a business, an industry, a sport that has got a completely unique aspect to it, which is, you know, that we're all stewards of the animals. So that's a further complication, obviously. So, but you know, let's not, there's two sides of this coin. Let's not pretend that, you know, nobody else deals with the challenges, and do that any better than we do. And at the same time, let's also, you know, take advantage of, you know, understanding the opportunity. So I just, all this to say that what went on here, I thought Saturday had something for everybody. And that included the way in which the day was merchandised out to the public, you know, in terms of broadcast and online options and so forth. So just some random thoughts that come pouring out of my head that I absolutely had not necessarily thought of. Shug, I mentioned, is going to join us, and probably next, actually. Phil D'Amato, as promised, going to catch up with Phil, and not only Newgrange, but his winners from last week. We got to do, and Andy Serling later, Bruce Lunsford, I think, in hour two, waiting for a time confirm from Bruce to talk about his situation and you know, how delighted that he had about as broad a smile as anybody could have walking to the winner's circle Saturday for Art Collector. Herb Oster is going to be here because yesterday, I don't know if you heard some of the noise, a little bit of noise in the background in the late stages yesterday, but the Groom Elite program, and of course, Reed McClellan, and Reed's not here. He lost his mother. For those of you that that know Doc McClellan, he couldn't come to this session, and he's got one of the other managers from the Groom Elite program here. So send Doc best wishes and thoughts on the passing of his mom. The Groom Elite program, for those of you that haven't probably haven't talked to Reed 4 or 5 years actually about it, but what it is a traveling education program sponsored by racetracks and typically the, you know, the horseman's organization in that market. And it takes backstretch, basically introductory backstretch workers. Typically, in fact, the group here that's going through it this week, they're all hot walkers, and they want to graduate up to groom level. And so the Groom Elite program essentially certifies them as grooms. And Reed McClellan has been doing this, I don't even know how long. And it doesn't get nearly the publicity that it deserves. You know, but obviously, you know, a hot walker is kind of a, not even a really a day rate, sort of a day rate position on the backstretch. And, you know, the next level to a salaried employee is the groom concept, and right up the ladder, you know, foreman and an assistant trainer and so forth. So they had about eight or nine here yesterday. They come in a little, they have a little lunch, and then the afternoon program, and it goes for a week. And Gulfstream is sponsoring it, as well as the Florida THA. And so Herb Oster, before the session starts today, Herb's going to join us at 11:30 after Andy. Looking forward to that. Herb was actually a New Yorker. Herb he's been down here a while. He's on the Florida THA board. So we'll visit with Herb too. All right. And I had some. We're missing somebody. There's somebody else. Oh, Michael W. If we get a confirm, from him. So that's there you go. That's the lineup. All right, not hearing yet from Bruce, so we will make the move to. I tentative for 10 o'clock with Bruce, so we'll see if that works. In the meantime, I'll probably continue a little bit of this discussion with Shug because I thought it was pretty, you know, pretty interesting that. All right, so well, we'll have to wait until now. We got to wait until Shug calls back. Going through some of the other results from the weekend. While we wait, the developing story in Kentucky with Jonathan Wong and the Tommy Town horses and the Tommy Town operation coming to the eastern half of the country, and this is this is part of the very complex and difficult circumstances seemingly on the West Coast. Dan Ross actually today in TDN, if you haven't seen it, Dan has got kind of a deep dive analysis of last year's of the 2022 handle numbers in California. And I think this topic will get no shortage of attention given, you know, the all Baffert running of the Lewis on Saturday. In the meantime, you know, the fact that Tommy Town and Jonathan Wong was taking a string and operating in particular at Turfway this winter, and they won the stake on Saturday, the Wishing Well, as second choice, Opening Buzz, a Stanford Tommy Town homebred. So that's a story that I kind of want to get into at some point as well. So keep that on the back burner. Let me get some of the rest of the Saturday that we did not talk to. Phil D'Amato, I mentioned, is going to join, so we will save the D'Amato horses, a New Grange from this week. We'll save that, and I think we talked yesterday. We talked just a touch on the San Vicente having a meltdown is going to stay short, according to Baffert. And Faustin, who was second, basically his co-favorites having a meltdown in Faustin. Faustin is going to stretch out yet, and don't know if that means the San Felipe or something out of town, but that's the one. They were a dozen lengths clear of the next two in the San Vicente on Sunday. And in the Clocker's Corner, you know who else is starting to ratchet up some winners? Richard Mandela, the Clocker's Corner down the hill, and Laneway as the 2-1 second choice. We'll ask Phil his thoughts on Motorious, who seemed emergent earlier in the month. Motorious second, and just really was not getting to Laneway. And Laneway happens to be a my racehorse, speaking of the fractional ownership. But it's been a couple of nice winners from the Mandela Barn starting to accrue. We went over, right? Did we go over? Yeah, we went over Oaklawn. And, all right. So, that I can... there's nothing I like better than winnowing down the pile of paper. that manages to pile up here. All right, let's see if we can't try again with Claude Ray. And yeah, we gave you the there we go. Yeah, his phone was not ringing all that great. Shug. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. We're not going to talk about a winner right away. I happen to have started the show this morning. I kind of still summarizing what went on here Saturday, and part of what I talked about, Shug, was, you know, the exposing the game and engaging people, and that conversation included the discussion I had with you and Allison, and you told me about Ken Langone. You know, here's an ideal guy to come into the game late in life. We had this with Wingate too, with Kathleen O. And I, you know, you and I have talked about, you know, even you kind of changing and morphing in terms of the owners, the kind of owners that you've added. You know, talk about from your perspective, from a veteran horseman, you know, bringing new people into the game.
Well, you know, with me, when the fifth was cut down, you know, I kind of had to sort of open my doors a little bit. Some people came through. You know, I mean, obviously Bill Parrish and West Point were big. Joe Allen was big. You know, I mean, I still got, you know, plenty for Phipps and plenty for Stuart Janney. But, you know, these some guys, I mean, like with Wingate, I wish Pat Gurney got in 40 years ago because he's lucky. And Ken Langone, you know, they kind of met him through Mrs. Phipps, being a friend of hers, and he was at Saratoga. And I guess he sort of enjoyed the weekend that he was up there. So maybe it's something I can get involved in. You know, I think he wants to be part of a, you know, a partnership and stuff. He didn't want, you know, some trainer calling him every day. And, you know, I think he, you know, he's invested and, you know, just hopefully we're going to have some luck for him.
I'm not looking to put you on the spot with this question, but when you look at the concentration of talent, Shug, that is particularly at the upper levels, where it feels like, you know, the mega barns are dominating. I mean, the situation in California is particularly acute. But for you and having, you know, having seen the evolution, what's your thought? I mean, is there a solution for this to spread horses around? Because obviously there's a lot of capable horsemen that deserve some more horses.
Well, the only way I could see, Steve, is if they were to, you know, limit the stalls. I mean, in New York, they really opened the door when, you know, they opened Saratoga up. And, you know, it gave those guys an opportunity to be able to take a lot more horses. But, you know, when I was coming up, the 36-stall limit in Belmont, there was no Saratoga. Churchill Downs is a 36-stall limit. It probably still is there, close to it. But they've got Keeneland, and there's a couple little training facilities, you know, in and around Louisville, plus the, you know, the old trotting track that Churchill's got with stalls. But it is a particular problem because, you know, so many of these races aren't filling, especially the dirt races. And, you know, if you do, some of these big stables have got, you know, 2-3 horses in it. And, you know, that's not their fault. I mean, that's who the people are reaching out to. And, but it makes it difficult. I mean, you read in the Pollock report today where Louis Caravella that had, you know, that fast horse a few years ago, you know, he's shut down and is going to work in a racing off as a Gulfstream, which, you know, he was with Bob Durso for a while. And,
yep.
You know, it's just kind of sad that you came back to, you know, that instead of sending a couple to him, they'll send them to, you know, some of these big name guys. And, you know, like you say, there's a lot of guys out there that are, you know, very capable. I mean, on the New York circuit, look at a guy like Tom Bush, and, you know, he couldn't accumulate anything. I mean, Chris Clement was, you know, he was trying to provide him with horses of Generacios and horses that, you know, were overflow to him and maybe not quite good enough for what he needed in his stable. But, you know, it is quite a problem. I mean, you know, the last two weekends they've run 3-year-old colt races out in California, and, you know, Baffert had 7 out of the 8. And, you know, it's not his fault. I mean, the people aren't going in to run against him. And, you know, SF and Zaydan and Starlight and them are sending their colts out there to him. You know, it's lucky for him. But it makes it, you know, it makes it a little bit difficult. You know, then back in New York, we got it with, you know, some of the grass races. You know, there'll be 5 in the race and Chad will have 3. You know, some of the dirt races more, you know, like with Todd, you know, he's got a bit of a dominance in the dirt races. And like I say, it's more power to them. But the owners, that's who they're reaching out to. And, you know, a lot of times when you go around their outfits and watch them train and stuff, you can see why.
It, you know, you mentioned Louis Carvel, and, you know, when Ray Mamone died, you know, there's so many outfits that are tied, you know, to one owner or just a couple of owners. And, when they either leave the business or pass, if you don't have some diversity, you're in a jackpot.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, it's hard to accumulate, you know, owners today, because a lot of them are in these partnerships, which are good. And, you know, they've got places they want to go. And, you know, if you get a big investor, like, just going to use for example, is West Point and Bill Ferry Woodford. They had a guy named Tala, who I don't know, from California, and he invested a lot in their partnerships. And obviously he lives out there. He wants to see them run out in California. And so, you know, a little bit of it's that, you know, if you get a big investor that comes in to the partnerships, they'll, you know, they'll kind of say, that's, you know, that's good, but if I'm going to invest this kind of money, I'd like to see so-and-so, you know, train them. And sometimes some young guy or smaller trainer might get a little bit of an opportunity, but usually they go to, you know, more of the named guys.
Now, this is it's a vexing issue, and there's no easy solution. I mean, we talked when you bring up the stall limits, and even that now is probably you know, almost too little, too late, because the private training centers, it's just as easy for big outfits to, you know, to have barns at Fair Hill and all the various, you know, all the various facilities, and train off the racetrack. Also be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how Heisa and Haiwu and how the out of competition is going to deal with that as well, and you know, keeping track of horses. This is a very, very difficult topic, but in the meantime, certainly Saturday, Shug, this was my first Pegasus scene, and I thought it was a nice show.
It is a nice show. They put on a good show. People like it. There's a lot of energy. It was a very, very good card that they put on. You know, hats off to Lake Cal and Mike Costanzo, the racing secretary, and Billy Badgett, and the work they put in to put this thing on. And, you know, as you saw here Saturday, there was a lot of stuff going on. And, I mean, I was talking to Andrew Rosen last night about, we were talking about it and talking about the fields and this and that. And I said, well, you know, the other thing we got to do in New York, you know, we do need to get the field sizes up. How that's going to happen, especially in the next 3 or 4 years, I don't know. But, you know, the energy that you saw, and, you know, I was told, my son told me before this year's Pegasus that the last year they ran the Don Handicap, the mutual handle was $14 million. Well, the other day it was $44 million. Hmm. And so it kind of shows, you know, with the good racing and some energy and publicity, you know, get the people out. There weren't, you know, a lot of the crowd that was here the other day was here for the festivities and won't be back, but that's okay too. You know, at least they were here and somebody might come back.
Exactly.
Somebody might,
yep,
might be like a Pat Kearney and go to a guy and say, you know, find me a couple and, you know, who knows, but, you know, hopefully that they can create, you know, they've created it in Louisville a little bit with their night race and,
yep,
you know, once a
that's
week
true.
And they,
yep,
you know, they get 30 some thousand people there and it's a lot of fun. You know, most of them are kids that aren't going to the races, but they're there and, you know, they're having a good time and there's energy in the building and that's what, you know, what you need. And they keep adding on to Churchill Downs. You know, they've got that nice Matt Wynn restaurant now and other things and things we don't have in New York. And hopefully when they get a new building, whenever that happens in Belmont, then we'll have some things like that that maybe will draw people from the outside or from the arena. But, you know, if you went to the races at Belmont or at Aqueduct right now, they're not really some place where you can say, let's go sit down and have lunch that you'd be, you know, really comfortable about. I know they've tried, you know, that new room they've got at Belmont, but, and then they had that, you know, they kind of opened up that Equestrius again at Aqueduct, but how much play is those things are getting, I don't know, because I wouldn't even know where they were. But I think that's a big part of here, that Carousel Club and,
yeah,
you know, what with them selling the tickets like up on the Twin Palms and, you know, I'm not sure they need to have a concert at Belmont, but, you know, maybe at Saratoga sometime it might be kind of interesting. And, but I think that's what it's come to now, that, you know, the old style owners, you know, we kind of grew up with, like the Phipps's and the Whitney's and Paul Mellon and King Ranch and all those kind of, you know, they're gone. And the people that are around today are really around, a lot of them are around racing just to have a nice time. And if you can add to that nice time through a different experience, I think that it would make it a lot more fun, as we saw here last Saturday.
No, well, all good points, and I'm glad you brought up the UBS Arena, and I think it has tremendous potential. Just, you know, having whatever it's going to be, 130 between the Islanders and concerts and circus and, well, there's no more circus, but you know, Sesame Street Live, whatever goes there and brings people in, and with the train station, you know, the permanent train station added, just getting people to the venue goes a long way. It can hurt. That's the bottom line. So,
I agree. You know, I think that, you know, they can incorporate a new smaller type, modernist type building to sort of complement the arena and the other stuff that they're doing there with the new tracks and this and that. I think it'll be, you know, I think it can be something to look forward to. You know, I don't know that you know, a lot of the outside outside fans really want to go to Aqueduct. And Belmont's just worn out. And I wish they, and I'm sure there's logistics that I don't know about. I'm not sure, not trying to tell anybody what to do, but I wish they had done the building first and then worked on the track to try to get all that done and kind of get incorporated, because they're still going to race it at Belmont from, you know, 1st of May through till we go to Saratoga. But like I say, I'm not the one to sit down with a pen and pencil to figure the whole thing out. So
you'll be ready no matter what. You'll be sending them out no matter what the situation is. And on that topic, let's talk about Saturday too, Shug, because we were together early and the first couple of races, the first and second, you kind of were getting the mindset that maybe it wasn't going to be a great day, but then it turned out okay. Personal best. What a nice ride. Arad Ortiz he put on a show Saturday on the turf races in particular.
Well, that's why I won the Eclipse Award. I mean, you know, he's a very professional rider. You know, knows what he wants to do, and you know, if you got him, you're in good shape. And you know, he'll give you the best of rides that he possibly can. And I think he understands the horses. I think he's a pretty good horseman. When I got back here after the seventh race, I'd ridden to Torrey on horse Smoke and Tea coming off the layoff, had 13 posts on the Tapete. He finished third. I thought he ran a good race. And, but I told Reeve and Anthony, I said, it's interesting when you talk to these riders that are good, really good horsemen and know what's going on, the feedback that you get, you know. And Irad was telling me with personal best in the short races, I had to kind of get her kind of into the race, and said then she'd want to pull me too much. And the other day I could kind of just ease her back and let her relax. And he said, when I got the 3/8 pole, you know, I had plenty of horse. And now that's his thinking. And, with the Tory, you know, he just looked at me and he said, in their English terms, the draw got us beat because you can't win from back there over this Tapete. You know, it's interesting. Pat Day was that way. Pat Day, you know, he come back, you know, after he rode one time, he knew the horse. And, you know, obviously a lot of the other riders are the same way. I just picked out three names, but I mean, Cadero, you know, in his way, he was an excellent horseman, an excellent rider. But, you know, I think that's what makes Irad what he is that he kind of understands he understands the horse and the race and what needs to be done.
This filly, she's a Tappet filly. It's a Joe Allen homebred out of the Warfront mare, War Flag. And it is, you look at her wins, Shug, the maiden breaker, and which came at Kentucky Downs, going a mile and 5/16. That was with Tyler. But then I read in the mile and 3/8 allowance at Aqueduct in November, and it does feel like, you know, these longer opportunities is where she's going to be at her best. This is a big win for a Joe Allen horse, because she's going to end up in the broodmare band.
Well, no doubt, you know, and you know, I thought when she broke her maiden down there and took it down the way she ran, I said, well, we're off the races now. And then I ran her at Keeneland, you know, and she looked like at the end of the stretch, it's going to be how many, and she finished second or whatever. But, you know, she'd gotten to where she wanted to hang with the horse a little bit, and that's what she did that day. And then, but I think that when she goes longer, what she wants to do, that she's probably not going to be quite as prone to do that. But, of course, that War Flag, you know, excellent broodmare, excellent family. This is the first foal, got a quality road capture the flag that won his first start at Saratoga and got hurt, and back training now at Payson, beautiful big horse. And she's got an Uncle Mo 2-year-old, an Into Mischief, which would be a yearling now. She's in foal to Gunrunner. And as I told Joe, I said, Joe, I can't train till I'm 100 now.
That's
if you keep doing this, you know, you don't keep me around a while. So, you know, it's exciting stuff, and that's what you know, that's what Joe brings to the table. He's got, you know, excellent pedigrees. We bought some stuff that a couple of years ago that I'm excited about that are just kind of getting started. And, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there, not only with a few of the sales yearlings, but with the homebreds too. You know, he's got 9 or 10 yearlings up at now Brennan's, you know, that, you know, there'll be a few of them with their pedigrees and stuff will be okay. And then, you know, what follows up all, you know, every other year's is, you know, I think it's going to be pretty good.
You know, Shug, and I'm just looking at, because, you know, I remember when War Flag jumped up and she won the Flower Bowl, and looking at the Joe Allen families, Joe came to you after Howie Tesher?
No. Joe sent me a horse when I first started training because I'd known him from the Whiteley days. Peter had horses with him, so he'd kind of come by the bar and stuff, so I knew him. I remember he stopped by there one day, and he had a tie on. I said, this was in the 70s. I said, Joe, I like that tie. He took it all and gave it to me. And, really, kind of years back, he got in touch with me and said that he sort of wanted to get back into the business. And between me and Magoo, we bought him some fillies, Glitter Woman being one of them, Starry Dreamer.
Oh, yeah.
Was another one that either won the La Previana was second in it, and but she's a dam of War Front. And there was a couple others that we bought. I know I bought a filly that had been running down here, and she run it Churchill in a 7/8 stake on Derby Day, and he called me and he said she was in the barn I was in then, and I was training, and he said, should we buy that filly? And I said, yeah, you can buy her. I said, now, she's not going to vet, but I said, that doesn't matter. Cause I'm watching her walk right now. Walks like $1 million. And she ended up winning a couple stakes down here, and then she won, you know, like the prep for the Molly Pitcher. It was really just getting good, and she hurt herself behind. And I just can't think of her name. And, you know, then that kind of, you know, then he kind of sort of spread himself out a little bit. And then he sort of came back, and, you know, this is what we got now. But, we had a filly called You're Unforgettable, got beat a nose in just a game. I think won a stake down here. And, you know, obviously he's been a friend for a long time, and, it's a very pleasant association. He wants to be involved. Goes up to Payson and does a lot of it, you know, once a week or so to kind of be familiar with the horses and know what's going on, because he wants that. And he does a lot of homework with his breeding and sort of comes to a lot of that conclusion himself. And, you know, he's got some of his mares and they're all spring at Claiborne and some at Ashford, and I think he enjoys both those outfits. He's enamored by the tradition at Claiborne, as everybody should be. And you know, then he likes dealing with the Ashford people, and you know, they got some mares out there, and then some of the yearlings go out to their subsidiary farm called Creek View. A guy named Brian runs and does a heck of a job. So, you know, I think not only does he want a lot to happen racing wise, but I think he enjoys kind of piddling with this stuff, thinking to the future. And, you know, he's got special races that are good, that he wants to be able to participate in. And, he likes the longer grass races, and, you know, kind of that's what the sort of the pedigrees sort of allow.
Well, and you had very similar, you know, very similar track, you know, going back over the past decade or so, with that that parade of the FIPS turf horses too, with like Point of Entry and Data Link and who's the big third? We had that third one we talked about all the time. Wow, Data Link.
Point of Entry, I think, might have been one of the best horses I ever had my hands on when he was. You know, he won a grade one. He won grade one stakes on turf he didn't like, you know, because he really wanted it hard. And, you know, he got beat out in the Breeders' Cup to Dale Rowland's his horse. And, you know, that was kind of a crusher. But, you know, then the next year, he was coming off a layoff. He got hurt in Manhattan on Belmont Day. And I trained him into it, and he finished fourth. And Santa Anita Rosario rode him, and he just let him get too far back. And, I think Johnny was supposed to ride him. That's the time when Johnny got hurt on that 2-year old.
Yep.
And, so we had to find a rider. And, of course, Rosario was one of the best, but that didn't work out that day. And, so yeah, no doubt, parading and Point of Entry and Dad Link with Stuart Janney's, Ironicus with Stuart Janney. So we've had, you know, for some reason, we've had a little bit of a run with turf horses. The Seeking the Gold mares seem to get turf horses. I don't know why, because nothing in the pedigree or him ever said turf, but they seem to like it. And so that was sort of that. And so that was... You know, the Pips, both of them still got drafts. I've got an Ironicus in here on Saturday that I like a little bit called Windsor Park. Had a Carriage Trail. The Carriage Trail rat was second to Wait a While in the Boston Spa, I think. And then she won a grade one on the Poly Track at Keeneland. And, of course, Ironicus, you know, he won the Bernard Baruch, was fourth in the Breeders' Cup, and among other things, he was... He was a nice horse, so I'm looking forward to running him also on Saturday. And you know, he's got that horse Celestial City that won the Hill Prince and was, I think, dead even for second, and won the 3-year-old stakes at Saratoga that Annapolis won. You know, we were just second best because Annapolis, you know, gets those 3-year-olds, as you know, last summer was pretty good. And so, yeah, there's, you know, we've had some luck with the grass, and you know, I hope some of these things will be, you know, good on the dirt too, which they will be.
You know, I just happened to look it up because I was curious. This was your third Le Previant, and the first one you mentioned, Pat Day earlier. You won it at Calder in 2001 for the first time with Cressada. For the McNairs.
Yeah, about that. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
She's a big, tall Chris S. Philly, big, dark bay Philly. I remember now.
She, in fact, that was her final career start, Cressada. She won the Le Previant. That's pretty, yeah. And that was her only graded stake win. That 2001. And then you also... You also won it with that Casablanca. Was it Casablanca Smile?
Yeah.
Casablanca Smile, maybe?
Yeah, well, that Greek guy. She won that. Oh, then she won that race all the layoff, I think, and then she won one of those long races at Keeneland, and then she kind of went off form as a filly they bought down at Chile or Argentina or someplace.
Yeah.
brought her up here.
You're amazing, Shug. She did win off a layoff. She hadn't run since January 2nd of 2011. You brought her back off a layoff to win it a mile and a half on December 2nd, 2011.
Yeah. I didn't know it was that long a layoff, but
yep, with Javier. you beat that nice cheetah that Chris had, that Clement had.
Yeah. Chris wouldn't have liked that.
You know, you mentioned the weekend. Let's look ahead because you do have some interesting horses. Tell us about the sprinter in the Swale on Saturday, General Jim.
Well, General Jim's a nice horse, and he the first time I ran him, he finished third. He didn't break good and kind of rushed up, and he didn't run bad on the dirt. But then I breezed him up there a couple times on the turf and decided to run him on the turf, and he broke his maiden, and I took him to Keeneland to run him in a stake there, and he got on also eligibles and didn't draw in. So I just left him there, and he won the allowance race in very impressive fashion. And then I ran him in that stake at Aqueduct on the turf, and, you know, he looked like he was going to win easy and finish third. And then Mr. Adams was sort of anxious to try him back on the dirt, which I didn't have a problem with whatsoever. And So I thought the Mucho Macho Man was kind of the perfect spot, and he trained good up to it, and, you know, he just kind of ran, looked like he was going to win and didn't win. And, I mean, Sias came back shaking his head and said, you know, he's just much better than these horses. And so we put some blinkers on him, and he's had two really good works. I decided to back him up just a little bit, maybe let him lay in behind the speed and make one quick run with him, and the race did come up with some speed in it. So he's got enough speed to where he's not going to be out the back. And, I'm looking forward to running him on Saturday. He's horses come a long way this winter physically and kind of mentally. He's gotten bigger. He wasn't real big into mischief, throughout his 2-year-old year. And, but now I think he's starting to come into his own, and like I say, I'm looking forward to running him in the Swale, and, you know, if we run good, and, you know, then we can stretch him back out and see where we belong.
Very nice. On the 3-year-old topic as well, let me get an update. Where's Pleasant Passage at this point?
Pleasant Passage is at Niles. She's getting ready, Brennan. She's getting ready to start breezing, and she'll come to Payson probably the next 3 weeks, and I'm pointing her for that grass stake for 3-year-old fillies at Keeneland right the first of the meet. Maybe the Appalachian going a mile.
Excellent. And a couple other stake winners, because we haven't caught up. Actually, I got to ask you about Stolen Holiday, too, that won at the end of the year.
Well, Stolen Holiday was going to run here in the Pegasus turf, and she got hurt breezing on the turf up at Now, so we had to send her home, and she's going to be bred to end the mischief.
Oh, so that's it?
That's it.
Oh, boy. What about Celestial City?
Celestial City, after he's up at Niles, he's back training. We'll have him ready to run in spring, too. I just want to give him a little bit of a break, and we gave him a break, but he's back training now and should be getting pretty close to breezing.
Excellent. Excellent. So there's still plenty to be looking forward to. There's also been a bunch of maiden breakers that we could ask about. But let me find out. Is In a Hurry finished? Did she go to the shed?
Yeah, she's going to be bred to Violence.
Very nice. There we go.
Yeah, that's on the Forte. Same cross as Forte.
I asked you about Kathleen O, and how far along is she toward return?
February the 18th in the Royal Delta.
Written in stone. Mark it down.
Well, mark it down.
I love it. Shug, tell me about one more or two here. The Warfront. This is actually now a 4-year-old, not a 3-year-old, to Joe Allen's Border War.
Well, he's going to run back here. I think it's on the 11th. Going long on the grass, a maiden 4-year-old race. I like him. He's trained well. I thought his race was okay here on the last time he ran. And, you know, I'm looking forward to running him back. Big, solid horse and trains good. And, you know, I think that, unless I'm wrong, I think in the route races as we go along down the line, I think he could be a factor.
How about that Fort Washington who's working right along?
Fort Washington is going to either run in the Canadian on March the 4th or the MacDeer Media. I'm wanting to get them stretched out, but I'm just going to have to kind of wait and see what's going to show up. Those long races, sometimes, you know, you get some professionals in there, and he's never run that far. The other day in the Tropical Park Derby, he ran a really good race. He makes mistakes in his race, Stephen, and he always has been a little bit green. The other day, Jose came back and said he got to lugging in on me a little bit the last part of it and probably cost him the race. But I thought he ran good, and I think as we go down the line, I think that with racing and maybe getting him stretched out a little bit, I think you'll see him show up quite a bit.
There's also a four-year-old filly that looks like she could take the next logical step and would be great for the Phippses. Surprisingly, the Mastery filly.
Yeah, surprisingly, ran really good here the other day in the Tropical Park Oaks. And she's going to run at Tampa. She runs there this weekend in the Endeavor.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll be over there. We'll be over at Tampa for Sam Davis Day. And then finally, a couple of maidens that are coming up this week. Let's do that survey very quickly. You've got Game Change tomorrow. That's in the 7th with Tyler. And then Citizen Mac, that on Friday. And you already talked about Windsor Park.
Well, Game Change has been a little bit of a question mark to me. He's trained really well and hadn't run quite that well. But, you know, I'm hoping he's just a slow learner. He had a good work here the other day. His race the other, you know, around two turns was his best race. He kind of got a little green when the dirt got to hit him in the face. Tyler said he was okay when it was hit him in the chest. When we got him outside, he sort of finished up a little bit. You know, if he doesn't improve some this time, then we'll go to the grass. But he's a big, nice horse with a good pedigree. And, you know, I think somewhere along the line, the light's going to go on and he's going to be okay. I hope it'll be Wednesday.
Well, and then for Don Adam, the Quality Road Colt, Citizen Mac on Friday.
I've been having a hard time getting that race to go, whether it was here or Tampa. He probably wants to run a little farther, run his best race than three quarters, but, you know, I had to run him somewhere. So he has trained good here. He, again, had a good work the other day. We'll just have to see, you know, whether he's going to do on a circuit like this or if he needs to go a little bit easier. But we'll see. You know, a couple of his races have been okay. And he worked in one of those trial races for that new shoot at Saratoga. Jose worked him, and, you know, he came back to his horse really ran good. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe off the layoff and he's fresh and this and that he'll show up here on Friday.
Wow. It feels like you're very well positioned going into the year. Of course, February's tomorrow. And I'm just noticing, Shug, I hadn't occurred to me to mention this, but now I will. You know that last year was your fourth best year of your career in earnings?
Well, I knew the earnings were good. And I think, you know, we had a little bit of bad luck here and there, but everybody does. It might have cost us a little bit even more in earnings. And, you know, I think that, you know, we've got young ones, we've got middle-aged ones, and we've got older ones that I all think are going to, you know, all goes right, are going to have chances in some of the bigger races. And you know, we're looking forward to kind of kicking it off, Steve.
Well, and I'm going to throw one other stat by you that you might be aware because you don't miss too many tricks. You know that you started the second most horses in a calendar year that you ever have last year?
I didn't know that, but we had a lot of horses. We had a lot of horses to run. You know, we were running at Churchill. We were running at Keeneland. We were running Maryland, Colonial, and New York, and, you know, a few down at Monmouth, a couple at Presque Isle. So, you know, we're getting them spread out a little bit, and, you know, I'm sure we'll do that again this year.
Well, 1985, you started 395 runners and 390 last year. So you're not. It doesn't look like you're slowing down. You are gonna train to 100.
I don't know if I'll make 100 or not, but I'm not. I'm busier now than I had planned, but I'm enjoying it. My people make it easier with Anthony and Reeve. They take a lot of the burden off of me, and so I enjoy coming in, and I get frustrated when they don't run up to my expectations, but everybody else does too. So, you just try to regroup, and you look forward to, last week we had chances, and we're in a big stake, and then we were in two overnight stakes, and this weekend we're in stake here and a stake at Tampa. In fact, two stakes at Tampa. We're going to run the grass race too with Creed. And, so it's kind of, the horses are here to get excited about. And, I think that, my people are pretty excited about some of it. I know Joe is, he plans well in advance. And we had a little talk about that yesterday to where he kind of comes up with a plan, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And Stuart's always enthusiastic about the races, and I think Daisy and the Pipses are they've got a few things going on. They got some nice babies, and they're 2-year-olds now. And I ran a horse over Tampa going along on the grass Saturday, finished second, finished really well out of that Vagabond, which I'm really, I was really impressed with the way he ran, but Twirling Candy. And so I'm hoping that, he'll go on and pan out. He doesn't really need to go. I don't think he really needs to go to Tampa again. He just needed some experience. And, he'll run here. And I think that, I think they've got a chance to have a decent year.
I love it. Well, that year I'm referencing, 1985, I wanted to go back and look and see who the big horses were. And, of course, Van Landingham had a great year for you in 85. But I'm going to close out by asking you about a horse who I've never asked you about.
Hit me.
1985, Exarban. You won the President's Cup with Government Corner.
Yeah, Government Corner was by Dan Zigbaugh to Johnny Edge, Wild Ball at the time. Nice horse. I think we ran him back after that in one of those other races at Exarban, and maybe didn't do any good, but I don't know really what happened to him after that. He was stable I think at that time he might have been stabled at Arlington with Phil Oswald while I was at Belmont or Saratoga, and we shipped him down there to run him, and he won. So
John Lively aboard.
John Lively, the father of Patrice Smith. A lot of luck with John. Very, really, really decent Midwest rider and really good guy.
I love it. I love when we happen on things like this. Shug, as always, outstanding. Great job, and good luck this week. We'll see you out here.
All right, Steve. Thanks.
The unbelievable, the one and only, the always. I just, it's like volleyball. I just do the little setup, and he just. It's amazing to me how he can remember every single thing, every little detail. That's a horse I've never, with all the greats and Hall of Famers that Shug Strain, to come across a horse I've never really noticed. A horse that time forgot. Government Center. Had a long career, too. And wasn't a gelding, was a horse. And exactly right. Danzig out of an Appalachian mare. Papachi. Made the $250,000. 37 career starts. Exarban.
You don't want me to launch into my Exarban treatise, do you? Well, we do have a minute and a half. Bruce Lunsford's going to join us next. Looking forward to that. And then Phil D'Amato, Andy Serling, Herb Osler, and Popo. I want to check in with Popo, assuming that he's free. I don't know if he's got a meeting. Popo's, he's a going concern. He's busy. But we'll see if we can't get a weekend recap from Popo as well. But the went to Exarban once, and I'm so glad that I can say I went. My buddy Phil, who was at my longtime Eagles season ticket holding partner, he was at the game Sunday. He came out to visit me. I was living in Kansas City, and we drove up to Omaha and had as great a day as you could ever have at a racetrack. So much fun. I wish I could. I know I can probably narrow it down. I don't know if we could find exactly the card, you know, exactly the day. But it was during the summer because we also went. I was a Royal season ticket holder, so we went to Royals game. But we went up. We each won, I think, a couple of hundred. And at that time, there were two famous steakhouses, Johnny's in the yards, in the stockyards, and Ross's Roost. And we went to Johnny's. And you know I'm not a huge steak eater, but when I have a steak, I'll have a filet. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. There's one part of living in Kansas City, wherever you went, within about a 500-mile radius, you're going to get yourself a good steak. And, you know, I was doing food service sales for Procter & Gamble. I called on every restaurant in Kansas City, every famous joint in Kansas City, all the barbecue joints, Arthur Bryant's and Gates and Smokestack and...